Welcome to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hemmerker. In each episode, she'll talk with your favorite romantic suspense authors. They will take you behind the scenes of the writing process, giving excerpts from their writing, and share stories about their writing life.
Cage, The Sixth Commandment by Charlene Amsden. She can't remember who tried to kill her. He's the only one who believes it wasn't random. Once a relentless investigative journalist, Trina Vaughn now hides behind leather jackets and revving engines, recovering from a shooting that stole her memory and nearly her life. The cops say it was a mugging. Trina's instincts say otherwise. Martin Cage Kincaid, an ex-con turned part-time pastor, sees what others won't. This was no random attack. Someone wants Trina silent. Permanently. As danger closes in and memories surface, they must confront the past to survive the present. Trust is rare, but it may be the only thing that can save them.
On this episode of The Romantic Side of Suspense, my guest is Charlene Amsden, who is a storyteller, coffee enthusiast, and devoted follower of Christ. So welcome to my show, Charlene.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So you talk a little bit about in your bio that you're a former elementary school teacher, children's ministry leader. So why romantic suspense? I mean, it sounds like you could have been writing children's books instead. So why made you start writing romantic suspense?
Probably the same thing that made me teach. I like action. I like suspense. I like tension. You never walk into a classroom 2 days in a row and have the exact same thing. It's always different. It's always changing, even if it's the same people. And I was writing the sweet romances, but they did not hold my attention. And if they didn't hold my attention, how did I hope to hold a reader's attention?
Right. Yeah, so you switched to, of course, romantic suspense, which is the best genre ever.
I think so, too. It's what I read, so why shouldn't I? I actually didn't think I was smart enough to write it.
Oh.
And then I started, reading other people's and taking them apart, and I took a class on plotting, an in-depth class. Mm-hmm. It was amazing. I walked away with a 67-page outline, which is basically the first draft. And in my head, I always create powerful, Christ-loving men. I want them to be the center of my story.
Mm.
And that works really well in suspense, Christian suspense.
Yes, definitely.
Because that's where their strength comes from.
Mm-hmm. So what does your family think that you're writing romantic suspense? I mean, that's a little bit of a switch from a sweet romance.
My family has always been my biggest supporter. I don't even have words for, unconditional positive regard comes from my family towards me almost always. And I'm not telling you they think I can do no wrong because I've been yelled at. When I decide to try something new and creative, nobody questions me. Nobody says you can't do it except me. They all like, go for it. Give it a try. And my sister Carol and my husband, most especially my husband, are 100% behind me always.
Mm. Yeah, I think it's great when your family can support you like that. I know mine are very supportive of my writing, my husband, my kids, and my mom, of course, is one of my biggest fans. It's just really lovely to have that support. I know not every writer has that, so I definitely never take that for granted.
Yeah, I know, and I feel bad for the writers who say, I grew up, my dad told me I couldn't write, not that I didn't have the talent, but he wanted me to eat.
Yeah.
So things like that. My grandmother said, if you want to be a writer, please go to journalism school because I want you to eat. But it's not that they didn't believe in my talent or my ability to do it. They just weren't quite certain I was cut out for fame.
Yeah.
And I wasn't when they were telling me that. I was 19.
But, right.
but I never quit. I never gave up.
Yeah, so is that what you wanted to be as a child and to be a writer?
It certainly was. I wrote my first book at 6 years old.
Mm.
And when I was 7, my aunt gave me an Underwood typewriter. You know,
oh,
one of those
lovely
big old,
uh-huh,
it weighed more than I did. And I had to push so hard on those keys that my fingers hurt. But I banged out horrible stories on that thing for years.
Ah.
But I grew up and became an elementary school teacher because bills are a thing.
Yes, yeah. But you're a writer now, so I guess your dream did come true.
I didn't write my first book till I retired. I retired early. My husband said, why don't you stop teaching and start writing? Because I had been writing, of course, all along. He said, you're
right,
pretty good now. I think you should do this.
Oh,
so,
well, that's
I
lovely.
Am.
Yeah, so... What is one of your favorite ways to connect with readers?
Right now, it's mainly through my newsletter. I answer anybody who writes to me, or I try to. If they just write something like that doesn't really require a response, I don't
mm-hmm.
always answer because I get so many emails. But if they write to say, oh, you told this story in your newsletter, and I can relate to it because of this, or
yeah.
I respond. And I have made some friends, people that I have known for 3 or 4 years only through my newsletter, that I now
mm-hmm.
consider friends.
Yeah.
And I am toying with the idea. I haven't quite wrapped my head around it, but of having like a monthly Zoom chat or something just for my fans. I've not done a Patreon because I don't want to make people pay.
Right.
I want them to pay for my books, but I don't necessarily want them to pay for me.
Yes, yeah.
So I'm still trying to wrap my head around how it's going to work and how much it's going to cost me in writing time.
Right, yeah. Yeah, there's always a trade-off between doing all these things and writing. So it's always good to keep in mind and make sure that we guard our writing time because that is valuable.
Yes.
And we have to do the other stuff, and we want to do the other stuff, but we still, if we're not writing books, then, you know.
Right. And it doesn't have to be every month, maybe quarterly. I'm working on it.
All right. Well, that's great. So speaking of writing, Charlene, what is absolutely essential for you to write? What do you need to write?
The only thing I need to write, I mean, I prefer to have coffee. On my computer, I have to have my... Oh, well, I don't. Sometimes I use my phone. But the only thing I really need is I pray, I set my mind on what I'm doing and why I'm doing it and who I'm trying to honor doing it. And then I need a sense of security and peace. And that doesn't necessarily mean quiet. I go down to Jackson Beach and I write while there are kids running up and down the beach and dogs barking and people splashing in the waves. But I have a sense of peace there because the ocean, because of God's beauty surrounding me, and because I am safe. There's nobody going to come up and in public and bother me. It's like if I was out of the car on the beach, people might come talk to me. But if they see
right.
me in my car working, they just walk by.
Yeah.
And, like, I've tried that in coffee shops, but my friends just come in and sit down. And I live on a very small island, so it's pretty hard to go anywhere without finding a friend.
Right, right.
But they know I go down there to write, so they don't bother me. So that's really all I need is the Holy Spirit and a sense of peace. My focus.
Yeah. Mhm. Yeah. Yeah. Focus is great. What are characters? So romantic suspense. We put our characters through the ringer, and sometimes we have to kill them. So have you ever regretted killing off a character, and why? I have. I mean, I'll tell you, I've regretted killing off a character. I've actually had a reader say, "Why did you kill him?" I'm like, "I'm sorry, he had to die." One of my characters, I gave him a short story, like a prequel sent, because he was older when he died. So I had one sent when he was young, set when he was younger. I was like, Fear, I redeemed him a little bit. I know he dies.
Well, I knew when I created this character that he was going. I mean, that was his purpose in the story.
Mm-hmm.
And I deliberately made him likable because I wanted the readers to care.
Yep.
But I may have done too good a job because my one of my critique partners was, you did not kill me. No. And my other critique partner was like, well, of course you did. And didn't you see that coming? And I kind of regret making him so likable.
Yeah.
And I don't know how other people are going to react, because you know that if one person gets upset about it, there are 10 invisible people standing behind her.
Yes. Yeah, that is so true. That is so true. But I love it when, you know, when a character dies and people like him or her, or they're a little, I love it when I get some emails like that, because I feel like, oh, well, they're with me. They're seeing it and they're upset. That's okay. You know? So,
and if he wasn't,
usually they kind of understand.
Right. If he wasn't likable, what would be the interest in reading the story and being worried? I mean, it's suspense. That's what we're supposed to create, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, if he didn't die, then there wouldn't be any threat. And
mm-hmm.
so.
Yeah.
I'm holding my tongue because anything I say will be a spoiler alert. You know?
Yeah. No. That's I totally understand. So we'll switch to titles. How do you title your books? How do you come up with those titles?
Blood, Sweat, and Tears. I just called this book Cage for the longest time. Then when it finally came out to Cage, the Sixth Commandment, was because that same critique partner who said that she didn't like that I killed the person that died, said of the villain, it serves him right. Thou shalt not kill. And when she said thou shalt not kill, I thought the Sixth Commandment. And it was like I felt it inside of me more than in my head. I'd been tentatively filling out series ideas. And as soon as that came to me, the series idea just opened right up, and I have more books than I'd originally planned, I think.
Oh.
So, for the series.
Yeah, well, that's always good, right? It's always better to have more than less, so.
Yes. And you don't always have to write them all.
No.
I learned from my early experiences not to set up the next book in the end of the first one, because something happens and then you don't get to write that next book. For me, it was cancer. And 3 years later, I don't have that book in me anymore. I'm
right.
a completely different person.
Yep.
So, but I'm cancer-free, praise God.
Yeah, that is a huge blessing, Charlene, a huge blessing.
It is.
So we have time Yeah,
we
never know how God, what God is going to give us and what path we're going to take, and yeah, totally understand that. So we have time for one more question about how you ensure your books are accurate. So let's talk about that before we end our time together today.
Research, of course.
Mm-hmm.
I have contacted police officers. I live on a very small island in the Pacific Northwest. And everybody knows somebody. So you just start asking, who knows someone I can talk to about this, if you want a real person. And one of my best friend's husbands is a police officer, so I just text him. The internet is a wonderful thing, but there's so much out there that isn't true. You kind of have to know how to separate the wheat from the chaff.
Yeah.
And my husband is a scientist, and research is
Ah.
practically his middle name. So if I can't find reliable information on something, or I'm not sure I've found reliable information on something, I just ask the scientist. And he
Ah.
comes up with it. And my fans, as they listen to your podcast, are going to laugh because my husband doesn't have a name. He is TS, the scientist. And it isn't because they don't know his name, it's just what everybody calls him.
Oh, that's funny, Charlene. That is funny. Well, thank you so much for being on my show. It's been a delight to talk to you about romantic suspense and your writing journey. So thank you again for sharing.
Thank you for asking me to share. This has been awesome.
Now an excerpt from Cage, The Sixth Commandment by Charlene Amsden. Trina. The camera never caught what mattered most. The sweat on a man's lip, the twitch of a nervous hand, the second before something went wrong. Trina Vaughn stepped into the Cedar Haven Garden Center reception hall, two steps behind KBRN cameraman Terrence Decker, already strapped into his beloved camera, Black Beauty, and recording. She'd held the glass doors for him, and now it closed behind her with a quiet bump. Decker whistled low. Oh, wow. This food's as spectacular as the venue. I gotta get shots of this. He veered for the buffet, oblivious to the guest or the event. Typical. Trina followed, heels clicking on marble, already regretting her trendy espadrilles. Deck, we're not here to eat. She struggled to keep her voice low and yet scold convincingly. Deck braced his feet and panned the buffet end to end. We've got time. Gotta catch the ambiance before the high muckety-mucks start speechifying. He plucked a crab canapé and popped it into his mouth. Grab me a couple deviled eggs, will you? Trina rolled her eyes but snagged two eggs and a canapé for herself. Try to act professional even if this is fluff journalism. You're allergic to joy. Deck pivoted his lens to the soaring glass windows. Look at this place. Flowers, champagne, sunlight, even the ceiling sparkles. Trina took a bite and chewed. The creamy crab mixture melted on her tongue but didn't dispel her frown. It must cost a fortune to air condition this place. Deck grinned. What would it take to make you happy anyway? She glared, aware he already knew the answer. Real news, she said anyway. Corruption, crime, murder, something that matters. This? She swept a hand at the crowd. This is rich people congratulating themselves. Poor people like flowers, too. Trina didn't laugh. You think this is journalism? Decker shrugged. I think it's a paycheck. I've got a wife and kid to feed. She was about to retort when something snagged her attention. A waiter by the punch table, mid-20s maybe. Pale, sweating, shirt stained, tie dangling like it had taken a dive in the punch bowl, and his red shirt front seemed to confirm it. He set a full bowl down, almost crushed a stack of glass goblets doing so, with his head on swivel. Trina stepped closer and lowered her voice. Deck, check out that guy. Something's off. He followed her gaze. Whoa, dude looks like he lost a bet with a garbage disposal. Or worse, he's jumpy, distracted. That tie's soaked. Deck zoomed in. Yeah, I got him. What do you think, drunk? Too alert and too twitchy. Something's wrong. We need to talk to him. Already moving, Trina said the last over her shoulder. Deck didn't budge. After the speeches, I have to get the stage set up on record. Trina hesitated. A tall woman in canary yellow stepped up to the podium as the band quieted. Cameras turned. Applause rose. Ignore this and I lose my job, Trina muttered. But my gut's screaming this guy is the story. Deck chewed his lip. Then your gut's gonna get us fired. He swiveled toward the stage, then snapped back around. Wait, wait, he's moving. Trina followed his lens trajectory. The waiter shoved a tray of canapés into the hands of a startled guest, then made a sharp turn toward the back of the room. Two men in bright green groundskeeping coveralls peeled away from the crowd and followed. What the? Decker muttered, already filming. The waiter glanced over his shoulder, then broke into a sprint. The gardener sped up, and Deck bolted after them. Surprise held Trina for a moment. Then she kicked off her professionalism and nearly her shoes, dropped the deviled eggs, and tried to keep up. Of all the days to not wear sneakers, she gritted, dodging a decorative urn filled with peace roses. The crowd pressed toward the stage, paying no mind to the strange parade scurrying in the opposite direction. The music swelled into John Philip Sousa's Washington Post March. Of course, the world celebrated while she and her camera guy chased a punch-soaked rabbit down a hallway. This better be good or Deck will never forgive me. She rounded the corner as the waiter shoved open a door marked Employees Only and vanished inside. The two groundskeepers followed. Deck paused at the door. Trina barreled forward. Deck raised a hand to stop her. The hallway was dim, the air colder. I don't like this, he whispered. Feels wrong. That's why we go in. She pushed at his arm. Smells like news to me. It could smell like a pink slip. What if it smells like a raise? He sighed, shifted his stance. Fine, stay behind me. He lifted his foot and pushed the swinging door open, leading with his camera. Trina heard a pop, a sharp sound like a cork, but wrong. Too flat, too fast. Decker stumbled backward. He turned, mouth open, red stain blooming on his chest. The camera slipped sideways on his shoulder and bashed into the doorframe. Run!
Thanks for listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hammerker. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. You can sign up to receive notifications of upcoming podcasts and listen to previous editions at sarahhammerkerfiction.com.